Good evening, boys and girls. My name is Jack, grateful member of Al-Anon. I am the speaker getter for this group. It is my favorite commitment of all time. I love bringing my friends in here. Sometimes, like tonight, I bring them in from time zones where they would probably be asleep right now. And I'm really, you know, I think we met before this, but I remember 10 years ago, Corey and I were talking in Nashville, Tennessee at the Music City Roundup. And after hearing her talk and spending some time with her during the weekend, I simply collected her. Her and I are Heart Connect buddies and have been from that day to this. And last year we lost a mutual really good friend, and Corey was instrumental in keeping me in the loop of what was happening with our friend Bo T, and his wife Shirley passed away suddenly and unexpectedly very close together last year, and it was devastating to do from long distance. And Corey was instrumental in keeping me in the loop and letting me know what was going on in Alabama when that went down. And I'm delighted to share with you guys my dear Heart Connect friend, Corey L. from Wetumpka, Alabama.
I want to thank Jack for inviting me to do this. I will tell you, if I could do math, one, I'd be an accountant, not a lawyer, and two, I'd be in bed and you'd have a different speaker, because I did not realize the time zones were going to be quite as dramatic as they are. We get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to walk the pup, and I will be getting up at 3 o'clock tomorrow morning, or soon to be this morning, to walk the pup. I am not, however, going to work tomorrow, because you've taught me to take care of myself, so I took the day off. We'll take the dog to doggy daycare, and then we'll come home and go to bed, take a nap. And I don't often agree to speak this late at night, because I'm not good this late at night, because I've been up since 3 this morning. But when Jack said, "Would you do it?" I talked to my husband, and I said, "Are you okay with me doing it?" He said, "It's Jack. How could you not do it for Jack?" And I thought, well, there you go. So I'm doing it for Jack. My name is Corey Long. I'm a very grateful, enthusiastic member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. My home group is the First Things First Al-Anon Family Group. We meet in Montgomery, Alabama on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings at 6:30 a.m. We say you got to really want recovery to get up at the butt crack of dawn to be there, but we are all there before work. And even on the Zoom, we're still doing it by Zoom because we can't get into the church that we usually meet at yet. And so I've been here since September 18th, 1998. If you are doing the math, that's slightly over 22 years. I can do that math. It's easier when it's even numbers. But I got here because I married a man who's afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. I didn't marry a doofus. I didn't marry a jerk. I married a really incredible man who happens to be afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. I didn't grow up in alcoholism. I don't have any idea what it is about alcoholics that I'm attracted to them, but I know that about myself. I'm attracted to alcoholics. Every man I've ever been attracted to, his drinking has bothered me. I thought it was just the men I was attracted to whose drinking bothered me, but turns out it's everybody's drinking bothers me. I used to be in airports and I'd count the people who were I'd watch people at the bar at the airport figuring out how much they were drinking to figure out whether or not I needed to be concerned if they were going to get on my plane. I don't know what I thought I was going to do if they got on my plane drunk, but I needed to be prepared just in case. I got to Al-Anon because my husband said he needed help with his drinking, and I'm all about help. Yes, let me help. I'm so good at helping. But I want to tell you about the week right before we got here, because that tells you an awful lot about who I was. I don't want to say a lot in what it was like. I want to talk about recovery, because I've been in recovery long enough that it's somebody said it earlier, it's transformed my life. I am not the woman I was when I got here. And so the week before we got here, it was my husband and I, and there was nobody else coming to the house. We were in our own little isolated house. It was like I was living my life looking through a straw, and the only person I could see at the end of the straw was him. We didn't have any friends. My family didn't know what was going on. He told me he was estranged from his family, and when I asked him why, he said, "It's a long story. You don't really need to know that." So I didn't ask, because if he's estranged from his family, that's one less problem I need to deal with. So there was nobody. It was Kent and I have his permission to break his anonymity. It was Kent and I spent my entire day thinking about Kent, watching Kent, trying to make Kent happy, because I had the idea that if he were happy, I would be happy. If he was okay, I was okay. Kent was not a bar drinker. Kent was a stay-at-home drinker. And he said to me one time, "Aren't you glad I was at home drinking?" Like, honey, you weren't home when you were home. You were just not there. And the drinking, we had, Kent and I had gone to high school together in Singapore. We had hooked back up again. He found me on the internet. He says I was in the Wild Monkey Woman chat room. And I said, that does not say anything good about you either, honey. But we met on the high school, he found me on the high school bulletin board. And we used to say a lot that we had to get married because we couldn't afford to date, because we were talking on the phone every single night. And even though I had a line at my office where I could talk to him and I didn't get charged for it, the phone bill for the first month was $1,000. And so it was like, we have to get married. You just have to come down here. I had the house. I had the job. I had the career. I had the insurance. He said I had what he was looking for. And we moved him down here. We were going to get married in March. My father was diagnosed with brain cancer September before that, passed away before we could get married. So we moved the wedding back to July. And right before his mother and father came for the wedding, he said to me, my parents don't know I drink. And I thought that was a little odd. He was 36. I was 35. I'm like, okay, what's going on with that? I said, the long story, you don't really need to know that. I'm like, all right, fine. I don't need to know it. I'm planning a wedding. Let's move on. But he said to me, so we need to get a refrigerator to put in the bedroom so that I can put beer in it while they're here so they won't know I'm drinking. And that seemed to me to be a reasonable solution to his problem. It didn't occur to me that that was a tad bit insane. The other thing that happened at that point up to the time we got here was prior to Kent, there was a man before Kent. I'd like to tell you he's my first alcoholic and I don't look so goofy, but he wasn't. And what I had done with the guy before Kent was I'd give him a credit card. I would have told you I was giving him a credit card to be kind. The truth of the matter is, having done a fourth step with a sponsor, I gave him a credit card to purchase his love. I figured that if he needed me, he would stay with me. I didn't care if he told me he loved me. I needed him to need me. That is my drug of choice. Need me, need me, need me, need me. So I'd give him the credit card. He had run the credit card up because he was drinking a lot. I don't know if he's alcoholic or not, but he quacked like a duck. He walked like a duck. He looked like a duck. My sponsor said, for your purposes, he was a duck. And so I did not make the same mistake with Kent. I did not give him the same type of credit card that I gave this other guy. I gave Kent the Citgo gas card. So all he could do was buy gas at the gas station. Because you see, I am trying to control somebody else's drinking. And I'd had that card for 12 years when Kent and I got together. And in July, right before the wedding, the credit card girl mysteriously did not appear at the house. So I do what any normal person would do. I called up the credit card company and cussed them out. Why haven't you gotten me my bill? Did you move? No, I didn't move. I've been in the same address for I cannot tell you how long. Get me my bill. And I am chagrined to tell you, I called them 7 times, I think, maybe 12, between July and September when my husband got sober, cussing them out for not getting me the bill. When my husband went to treatment, one of the very first things he said to me was, if you are looking for the credit card bill, it's in the top drawer of my dresser. It never once occurred to me that he would be coming home and taking the credit card bill and hiding it from me so I wouldn't see it. Because although you could only purchase gas, I thought he would only purchase gas at the gas station. You could also purchase beer at the gas station. And I had no idea. So the credit card bill was about $700 worth of beer in the 2 months before he got sober. But you see, that's an old idea that I didn't know I had until I did some work with my sponsor. And the old idea was, if you love me, you won't lie to me. And what I've discovered is when I was dealing with an alcoholic, it didn't matter whether he loved me or not. If he was drinking, he was lying. Didn't mean to. And that continued a little ways into sobriety. But the truth of the matter is, even though I love him, there are moments when I will lie to him as well. So I need to be very clear about how I have been profoundly affected by the disease of alcoholism and what my old ideas are that I am bringing into this relationship. So that's the setup to you to the week before he went into treatment. We went to play putt-putt golf in a place about an hour and a half from here. It's called Callaway Gardens. I stink at putt-putt golf, but I love to play. So my husband said, I'll take you to putt-putt golf. It's an hour and a half from us. By the time we got there, it was 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And my husband was grumpier and more cranky than I had ever seen him. I know that I saw Rich on here someplace. They say in AA, restless, irritable, and discontent. In Canada, they call it itchy, bitchy, and twitchy. And I think that is a much better description of what he was like and what I was like. I was always twitching, trying to figure out what was going on with him so that he would be okay. But he was very, very grumpy. We weren't there more than 10 minutes. We'd driven an hour and a half to get there. We weren't there more than 10 minutes. When I said to him, do we need to go? And he said, yes. And then I cannot tell you why this question came out of my mouth, but it did. And I can only attribute it now to the God of my understanding, a power greater than myself. I said, do we need to stop and get you beer for the ride home? And all my husband said was, no. But he completely changed in that moment. He didn't look himself. He didn't act himself. Completely changed. I don't know what you do when something like that happens, but I'll tell you what I do. I pretend it doesn't happen. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know what the deal was, but my idea is if I don't see it, if I don't acknowledge it, it's not actually happening. I can pretend it's not happening. So we drove home. We didn't talk that morning. We didn't talk about it that day. We didn't talk the entire day. He and I have never talked about that moment. Now, I've talked about it a lot in rooms like this, but he and I have never talked about that moment. The next morning, we got up. We went about our business as if nothing had happened. Because if I don't know what to say, I don't know what to say. I can't. If I don't have an answer, I'm going to pretend like there's nothing needs to be said. It's much more important for me that I look like I know what's going on than I actually do know what's going on. And it's all about how you see me. And it's about, because all of my validation is coming from the outside in. It's not coming from the inside out. I need you to think I'm okay. I need you to think that I'm enough, because that's how I felt my whole life. I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not funny enough. I'm not cute enough. I'm just not enough. And so I need you to make me feel like I'm enough. So it's all about how it looks on the outside. That was on Saturday. The following Thursday, I have to go to a professional obligation, and I leave the house screaming like a crazy woman. I am yelling at my house. My husband's not doing anything that he has not always done in the evenings, which is sit at home on the couch and drink beer. And I'm the one screaming like a crazy person. I left the house. I slammed the door. I went to the professional obligation. On my way home, I heard a voice as clear as a bell in my head that said, you need to go to Al-Anon. Well, I didn't have any idea what Al-Anon was. I'd never heard of Al-Anon to the best of my knowledge. So if I don't know about it, clearly it can't be that big of a deal, because I know everything that's important. So I just disregarded that thought in my head. I got into the house and Kent said to me, I cannot quit drinking without help. I said, yes, yes, I'm very good at helping. Let me help. I'm up. I've got the Blue Cross Blue Shield provider book. It says taken to mental health. I call. I find out what time mental health opens. We were up at 7 o'clock that next morning. We were at mental health. I walk into mental health with my husband in tow. And the woman there says, do you have insurance? And I said, of course I have insurance. I am very much a rules and regulation girl. If you tell me I need to have insurance, if you tell me I need to have a driver's license, if you tell me I need to have ID, I have all of those things. I have them all at the appropriate time. I have paid the appropriate fees. Rules and regulations, I like them. Right, left boundaries for me. Never occurred to me. Never occurred to me that people did not follow the rules. I am a lawyer. You would think it would cross my mind eventually that people do not follow the rules. Never did. Never crossed my mind. So she said, take him to treatment. All right, I'm taking him to treatment. I had no idea what treatment was. I'd heard about it, but I don't know what I thought they were. Well, that's not. I say that. I don't know what I thought they were going to do. I know exactly what I thought they were going to do. I thought they were going to sit him down and explain to him why he needed to not drink as much. I didn't want him to quit drinking completely, because, you know, people who don't drink at all are a little weird. So we don't want that. But I wanted him to not drink as much. What I know today is I wanted him to drink like I drink. I wanted him to think like I think. I wanted him to do what I wanted him to do. That was my entire modus of operandi, as they say. But so I thought they were just going to explain to him or tell him how not to drink as much. We got to treatment. We walked into the treatment's office, to the nurse's office, and she said name. And he gave his name, and I gave his name. She said birthday, and he gave his birthday, and I gave his birthday. And they said, how much does he drink a night? See, Fernando got on clued in way quicker than I did. And I said 8 beers a night, and he said 18 beers a night. And before I could whip around on him on the 18 beers a night, the woman said to me, what are you, his mother? And I was insulted and offended. I thought she was suggesting I looked old and tired. Turns out we have pictures. I did look old and tired, but I was a newlywed. I had been married 2 months when we got here. It was our 2-month wedding anniversary when he got sober. His sobriety date is our 2-month wedding anniversary. It's also my Al-Anon birthday, because the treatment center nurse then kicked me out of her office and sent me down to the family counsel's office. And I must have quit asking that, you know, 5-year-old question. Why? Why does he do what he does? Why does he think what he thinks? Why? And the family counselor happened to be a member of Al-Anon. And she said, if you love him, you will go to Al-Anon. And I thought, fine, I will go to Al-Anon. I've just married him. Of course, I love them. I will go to Al-Anon. So I didn't come for any of the good reasons. I didn't come because I thought I needed it. There was nothing wrong with me. Why would I look for help when there was nothing wrong with me? It was him. If he just wouldn't drink as much, I would be fine. And she said, and you can't see him again until you go to the Al-Anon meeting tomorrow. And I said, well, what do you mean I can't see him again? She said, you need to go home and pack him a bag. We're keeping him. I'm like, what? That thought never crossed my mind, that they were actually going to check him into treatment. I am incredibly well educated, but alcoholism makes me stupid. And so I went home, but I cannot show up at the Al-Anon meeting without having some vocabulary to act as if I know what I'm talking about. So I got on an online Al-Anon meeting on September 18th, 1998. Thank you, God, for those online Al-Anon meetings then. Every single person in that meeting told me to get to a meeting in person. I am absolutely convinced today it's because I was interrupting every 10 seconds, but I was so self-absorbed and self-centered, I didn't realize that. I thought they were all just being really, really kind to me. Oh, get to a meeting in person. So I went the next day, the treatment center had a meeting before the family counseling meeting, before I could see him. And I walked in that meeting, and this is my perception, because alcoholism affects my perception. It affects my hearing. I don't always hear what's said. It affects my sight. I don't always see what's going on. And this is what I saw and what I thought I heard. I walked into this room. There were three little, it's in Montgomery, Alabama. I am newlywed. I am 35 years old. There are three little old ladies with the, what I call the southern hair, with the very football helmet type hair and the blue rinse. And they were 103 if they were a day. They were old women. And they said to me, oh, honey, he'll drink again. They all drink again. But have hope. And I burst into tears because what's the point of this if he's going to drink again? The only thing I remember besides them saying that was they said the answers are in the literature. I didn't have any idea what the questions were, mind you, but the answers were in the literature. So I bought within the first week I was in Al-Anon, I purchased every piece of literature in print at that time. I had a canvas tote bag and I toted it around to every meeting I went to because the answers were in the books. I didn't know what the questions were and I was asking the wrong questions. I was asking questions like, what's wrong with him? Why does he do what he does? Why does he spend the money that he spends? Why does he think the way that he thinks? Why does he say the stuff that he says? Those are all the wrong questions. Never once asked the question, what is wrong with me? Why do I think the way that I think? Why do I say the stuff that I say? Why do I do the stuff that I do? Never asked those questions, but I had those books. So that was on a Saturday. We checked them in on a Friday. That was on a Saturday. On Tuesday, four days in, my husband comes home from treatment and says, I need to be rigorously honest with you. It was not a conversation I enjoyed then. It's not a conversation I enjoy now when he says that little phrase, I need to be rigorously honest with you. But he told me some things because I told you my old idea was if you love me, you wouldn't lie to me. And he said to me, I haven't been exactly honest with you. I didn't graduate from college. I dropped out when I was a junior. I've told you I'm a lawyer. It was very important to me that my husband had a college education. He said, I did not leave the military on an early out. There is not $25,000 in a bank account in Northern Virginia. I came in with a tremendous fear of financial insecurity. And he said, this is not my first treatment center. It's my third. And one was a year long. Now, I don't know what you do with that kind of information. When you get it, I will tell you what I did. I sat on the couch all night and cried like a baby. He, of course, went to bed and slept like a baby. And he'll tell you it's because the first time he was willing to be honest and suffer the consequences. I will tell you, it never once crossed my mind to leave. And I didn't know why it didn't cross my mind to leave until I'd been into an Al-Anon long enough to hear speakers talk about they knew it wouldn't look good. And I knew intuitively I could not leave that marriage after 2 months and make myself sound good in that situation. I would look like an idiot. So it never occurred to me to leave. I've got a friend who said, I'll make my bed and apparently I'll damn near die in it. But I was not willing to leave that marriage. I did not learn how to voluntarily leave any relationship until I came into Al-Anon. And it was in Al-Anon I learned how to let go of relationships that needed to let go, be let go of. I've got a friend who says there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to every relationship. And some last longer than others, and some are shorter than others. But it's a natural progression in a relationship. And I did not know how to let go of a relationship. I had to learn how to do that here. So after my husband had come home and told me all this stuff, he went to the treatment center the next day, the people we were paying a lot of money to, and told them that he had been to two other treatment centers, and one of them had been a year long. I'll be forever grateful to that treatment center, because his treatment counselor was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they asked him some pretty pertinent questions about what he had done. And as a result of how he answered, they sent him to Alcoholics Anonymous that Wednesday night. And he came home from Alcoholics Anonymous, he'd been detoxed. That was his first night home from rehab. And he walked in our bedroom and he said, "I have to go to a meeting every day for a year." And I said, "What the hell am I going to do? I am newly married." And he said, "I think you should go to an Al-Anon meeting. I think it's the same program. And you just go to Al-Anon when I go to AA." And that began the next 6 months of my husband sponsoring me in Al-Anon. Because you see, there's no need for me to get a sponsor in Al-Anon because there's nothing wrong with me. I'm only going to Al-Anon to help him stay sober, because that's my job, don't you know, it is to help him. And so now we have turned this corner. He's going to stay sober. So now the goal is to keep him sober. And how are we going to do that? Well, my husband decided he was going to start running, and I was going to help him run. That just tells you just how profoundly and deeply affected by the family disease of alcoholism I am, that I thought it would be a good idea to help my husband run. He was 36 years old. He had been in the military. He knew how to run, but I thought he needed me to be with him when he ran in order for him to be successful at it. So we bought a $79 Walmart bike, Jack, and I rode that. My Indian name is Chief Iron Butt, because I rode that bike with him as he started running. And he was going to run 3 times a week, 2 miles at a pop. And then I think we both forgot he was alcoholic. And within 2 weeks, he was training for a marathon. So I'm riding that cheap bike next to him as he's running, training for the marathon. And he's got a sponsor, and he's working the steps, and he's going to AA meetings. And he is a chatterer when he exercises. He likes to chat. Chat, 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 chat. And I am riding the bike, trying desperately not to die. And he's asking me questions like, "Got a sponsor? Got a sponsor? Got a sponsor? What step are you on? What step are you on? What step are you on?" And I thought, this is unbearable. I mean, I know I'm supposed to support and encourage my alcoholic relative, but this is awful. But I'm not willing to tell him how horrible it is, because I'm supposed to help him. Very quickly in recovery, he got this sponsor that I didn't like. I didn't like him then. I don't like him now. He didn't like me. He doesn't like me. Immaterial. I don't need to like my husband's sponsor. That man was exactly who my husband needed at the time, and I'll be forever grateful to him. It doesn't mean I have to like him. But he said that Kent had to go to this conference at the beach. And I said, we cannot afford to go to the conference at the beach. And I intuitively knew there were going to be alcoholic women at the conference at the beach. And I was not sending my husband to a beach with alcoholic women. And so I said, you need to call him and tell him that we can't go to the beach. And so he picked the phone up. It was on the wall back then. Picked the phone up, called the sponsor. I know he did, because I stood right next to him when he did it. And he said exactly what I told him to say. Corey says, we can't afford to go to the conference at the beach. Unbeknownst to me, my husband had said to this guy when he asked him to be his sponsor that he would be willing to do anything the guy said. And the guy said to him, you're already in debt. It's $250. You will not break the bank. You said you were willing to go to any lengths. I'll see you at the beach. Click. And because I was listening to him, I thought, rude, 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 rude. That man is so rude. But before I could unload on my husband did something he'd never, ever done before. He turned around to me and he said, I love you, and you are welcome to come to the beach with me, but I'm going with or without you. It's the first time my husband had ever stood up to me. I had thought all those times whenever I was going blah, 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 and Kent was doing this, he was agreeing with me because he actually agreed with me. I know today he was doing this and thinking in his head, please God, make her shut up. Please God, make her shut up. Please God, make her shut up. But I took that as agreement. This is the first time he had actively turned to me and said, I love you. You are welcome to come with me. And I'd love to have you come, but I'm going with or without you. I told this guy I'd do anything he asked me to do, and I'm going to do it. And I was stunned that he had stood up to me. Well, of course, I can't send him to the beach by himself because I have clearly just gotten this man sober. Some alcoholic woman's going to steal him from me, so I got to go. And so we're on the way going down to the beach when he says to me on the right car, in the car, I gave notice today. And I said, that's nice, honey. Notice of what? And he said, I quit my job. And this is my first inkling that Al-Anon was actually working, even though I wasn't doing anything, because I did not say what came across my mouth, my mind, which was, how could you possibly have quit your job? We need that money. My husband, by the time he got sober, was unemployable. And the only job he could get when he got sober was working at Michael's Arts and Crafts in the warehouse. And we keep the Social Security form that we get every year. He made $4,956 that year. I'm a lawyer, and I was terrified that we were going to debtor's prison without that money. But I did not say any of that. What I said to him was, wow, that's a really big decision, honey. The next time you make a big decision like that, I sure would appreciate it if you talked to me about it first. And I think we both thought, what the hell happened to Corey? She's had a stroke, because that would never have come out of my mouth before. I almost ran the car in the ditch because I had no idea where that came from. But that, and then I stopped. I didn't say anything else, because you see, my one of my great skills, I thought before I got here, because I am, of course, trained to argue, was I'm a great explainer. I want to explain to you what needs to be done. And if you do not agree with me, there can only be one of two reasons why you do not agree with me. Is one, highly unlikely, I did not explain it well enough the first time. So I shall explain it to you again the second time, and the third time, and the fourth time. The other much more likely scenario is you were not paying attention the first time I explained it. So I will now explain it to you again while I have your attention. So I would explain things to him until his eyes rolled back in his head and he keeled over and he agreed with me just as I said to get me to shut up. But when I said that, that's all I said. And I shut up and we went down to the beach. I can't tell you anybody I heard except for two speakers. The AA speaker was Clancy and the Al-Anon speaker was Mary Pearl. And the only way I can describe it to you was I was horrified. I was absolutely appalled that these people had gotten up in a room full of complete strangers. They were telling the most intimate details about their lives. Somebody was actually recording it. We call that a confession in my profession. You don't do that without legal advice. And you were laughing about this stuff. And honest to God, the only thought in my mind was, we are not this bad. We are not this bad. Okay, I know they may have to do this forever. Maybe 12 steps, 12 days. I mean, he's a smart guy. He could probably get this in 12 days, right? And I'm not even doing the steps because there's nothing wrong with me. But I do remember leaning over to Kent and saying, they're talking about this sponsor thing. Do you think I should get a sponsor? And I used to say it sounded like the woman behind me yelled at me. I now know who the woman behind me was. And I know somebody she sponsors. And they say, she did yell at you. Mary Pearl leaned up, yelled at me and said, get a sponsor. And I was horrified that she had heard me. But I must have looked like I'd been hit by a brick when I walked out of that meeting, because the taper, we had tapes back then, handed me a set of tapes from a woman out of Cincinnati. And he said, here, honey, listen to her. You might relate to her better. And that hooked me on speaker tapes, because it was somebody that I could relate to. They told me when I got here early on, listen for the similarities, not the differences. If you're looking for a reason not to connect, you will find one. They said things get different before they get better. Thank you, God. That first year of his sobriety was the hardest year of our marriage. From that day to this, it was the hardest year of our marriage. He'll tell you it was the best year of our marriage. It was the hardest year of our marriage. Things got different before they got better. They told me to focus on myself, to get a life, to let him do what he was doing in AA. They say focus on yourself, as if that's an easy thing to do. I've never focused on myself. There's nothing here to focus on. He's all I've got to focus on. But I'm going to AA, I'm going to Al-Anon meetings. I'm going every single night because that's what he's doing. On Saturday, it was date night. And we went to open AA speaker meetings on date night. And I'm so grateful he invited me to do that, because that's where I learned about the disease of alcoholism. For me, when my husband came home and told me all the things he had lied to me about at that day four of recovery, then I had a very hard time trusting him about anything else that he had told me. He told me he'd stayed sober for 18 months. So when he got his 1 year chip, it was not that big of a deal to me, because I was not going to be comfortable until he had had 18 months, right? I have the memory of an elephant, much to my husband's chagrin. I remember everything. These days, it takes me a minute or two to remember, but I can pretty much remember anything. So I remembered everything he said. And so when he was telling me stuff about alcoholism, I didn't believe him. I couldn't trust him. I go to open AA speaker meetings and I would hear other people talking about stuff that was happening in our house that they had no reason to lie to me about. I intuitively knew they had not gotten together and said, we need to tell this story to save Kent's ass because Corey's going to be mad at him. They were telling me the truth and I could hear it. And it's like Jack said about being heart buddies. My heart speaks to your heart speaks to mine. I can tell when you're telling me the truth. So when Mary Pearl screamed at me to get a sponsor, I started praying, not because I believed in the God of my understanding, I believed there was a God, but I thought it was a punishing God. I thought it was somebody who had, I had done enough stuff in my past and had put me on the bad girl list. Turns out I'm on the goofy girl list, but I was on the bad girl list. And so my idea of God was he would be over here taking care of the big stuff, world hunger, world peace, the Middle East, climate change. And I would be over here taking care of anything I get my grubby little hands on. When I was doing the steps with my sponsor, we came to decide, we figured out that when I got here, I did not believe in a power greater than myself. I believed there was a power as great as myself because I was responsible for anything I get my hands on. But I started praying for a sponsor because that's what you guys told me to do. And I told you I'm rules and regulations gal. You tell me rules, I'm going to follow the rules. You said get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. You did not tell me what to do about a sponsor. You just said get one. So I asked somebody. She said yes. That's all I needed was you told me to get one. I had one. Thank you very much. No more questions. Nobody said anything about calling a sponsor. Nobody said anything about working the steps. I didn't hear any of that when I came in here. I asked somebody early on, one of those little blue-haired ladies that I had seen at the very first meeting, about this whole sponsorship thing. And she said, we just let the group sponsor us. Everybody just gives you advice. And I thought, you people are crazy. I am not listening to anything you're saying. So that was the end of the sponsor thing for me. But they harp on it. You know, have you got a sponsor? Have you got a sponsor? Got a sponsor? You should get a sponsor. People are talking about sponsors. I wanted to feel a part of. So I talked about a sponsor. So you could ask me about a sponsor. So I got a sponsor. Didn't call her. Never met with her. Didn't work a step with her. But I'm still praying about this whole sponsorship thing. And Kent's harping in my ear. You got a sponsor, you got a sponsor, you got a sponsor. What? Stepping on. And I'm still riding that damn bike with him every Saturday and Sunday morning. And now we're getting into distance, like 6, 7, 8, 9 miles. He's running and yakking. And I'm on the bike trying not to die. And I didn't know stuff was sinking in my head, but apparently it was, because very shortly after I'd heard Mary Pearl talk about trying to kill her husband, he's running. I'm writing, and I think, and he's asked one too many times, have you got a sponsor? And I thought, I got to kill him. I got to run him over with a truck and make it look like a traffic accident. I just need one woman on the jury, and I'm pretty sure I could get off. But I knew not to do that. But I'm on this bike, so I whip around. He's shocking, and I just take off. I go home. This woman has come into our meeting. She'd come into the meeting about a month earlier, and that's part of the problem is that Kent was like the dog with a bone is, I hope I never forget this meeting. My sponsor's name is Luana. She's from Oklahoma. She's from Edmond, Oklahoma, actually. And her husband had been transferred to Maxwell Air Force Base. And she'd come into our meeting. We were sitting in a circle. It was the Wednesday night meeting. We were talking about the 12th step. And got around to me in the circle. And I said, oh, I haven't worked any of the steps, but I'm carrying the message. And I got around to her. And this is what I heard her say, how alcoholism affects my hearing. I heard her say, honey, you are not working the steps. You are spreading the disease. Shut up. And it hurt my feeling. I had one big feeling when I got here and she'd heard it. And I went home crying. My feeling. And Kent said, what are you going to do? And I think we both thought I was going to say, I'm going to quit Al-Anon. But what came out of my mouth instead was, I'm going to ask you to be my sponsor. And that was the dog with the bone. And so that's all it was. Have you asked? But I got to kill him. Raced up to the house. I picked the phone up. I called Luana. I said, will you be my sponsor? And she said, why me, honey? And I said, because I want what you have. I didn't know what I was saying then, but I know what I'm saying. I know today what I was saying. I knew what she was living with from listening to her in meetings. She had a husband who was not going to meetings. She had a teenage son who was a behavioral problem. She had a younger son who was developmentally disabled. And they were content, and there was laughter, and there was joy, and they were having fun. And she was not terrified the way that I was terrified, because my greatest fear was Kent was going to find himself that someone better suited for him in AA, and that he was going to leave me. That was my greatest fear, that he was going to leave me. And so when I said to her, something's popped up on my computer. Oh, wait. Will you be my sponsor? And she said, why me? Because I want what you have. I wanted that peace and serenity. I wanted that contentment. I wanted to be comfortable in my own skin. I wanted to love my I love my husband. I've always loved my husband, but I didn't want to be living in that fear. And she said something that was critically important to me, and I say it to everybody who asks me to sponsor them. She said, are you willing to do what I've done for as long as I've done it to get what I've gotten? And I said, yes. I had no idea what I was agreeing to, none whatsoever. And had I known, I probably would not have said yes. The same way, had I known the time difference, had I known it was an hour and a half meeting this evening, I probably would not have said yes to Jack. But I had been well trained to say yes. So I said yes, and I followed every direction that woman has given me from that day to this, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but I followed every direction that woman has given to me, and my life has been transformed. I am not the woman today I was when I got here. I'm just not. Everything about me has changed. When I got here, I was working a job that I did not think I could practice my profession in a manner that was with integrity and with character. And she got my sponsor got me very quickly into the steps. We started working the steps. I was working through the inventory and realized that I was afraid to leave that job. And she said, can you be the woman you want to be in that job? And I said, no. And she said, start looking. And so I started putting feelers out there. I was sure I was going to have to go work in a law firm. I was sure I was going to have to do 70, 80 hour weeks. I was sure it was going to be horrible, but I was beginning to develop an idea of who that woman is, that God's called me to be, that he's created me to be, and he's challenging me to be. And I began to develop that by going to meetings and listening to people who had done fourth and fifth steps, and who are working the rest of the steps. In my neck of the woods, people get to the fifth step and think, that's it, it's a five-step program. And the people who had gone further and had finished the steps, they were living a principled life. I talk about that a lot with a particular woman that I sponsor. Both of us have long-term in the program, and we talk about living a principled life. I think everybody on the planet lives a principled life, but they're not my principles. You know, one of the things we discovered, there are a lot of people who work from the principle of me first, me always. That's not my principle. But I need to know what my principles are and how I'm going to live my life. And that first, fourth, and fifth step gave me a beginning of how I wanted to live with care. I wanted to be a woman of integrity. I wanted to be a woman of character. I wanted to be a woman of dignity. And I didn't like who I was in that job. So I started putting things out about I wanted to leave my job. And out of the blue, unbeknownst to me, when I had gotten out of law school, I'd gone and worked, there's a thing called clerking. I'd gone to work for a federal judge and he called me. I'd worked for him for 2.5 years and I'd gone out in private practice and he called me and he said, I hear you're not happy. And I said, I'm not. And he said, come talk to me. And I went to work for that man. And that, when I stepped out on faith and I proceeded where the way opened, that was not the way I thought I was going to go, but that's the door that opened for me. My life it took a right turn, and it's all a direct result of working these steps. Because I followed the direction that I was given and I went to work with him, and that changed how I was at home because I wasn't bringing all this stress and anxiety home. And so Kent's an AA, I'm an Al-Anon, I've got a sponsor, he's got a sponsor. We got in service work very quickly because they believed in service work. I believe in service work. So I was a group G, I became a group GR cause I didn't know how to say no. And then, I went to area and we became the district rep. And they were doing area elections, and I said, my sister's husband had passed away, and I needed to take my mother to the funeral. I said, I'm willing to stand for any position. I just don't want to be treasurer. Who wants to guess what position I got? Treasurer, you know, and I did the service work that I was doing. But I'm telling you, I'm beginning to pay attention. I've learned about the disease of alcoholism. We say learn all you can about the disease of alcoholism because I need to know what I'm living with. I need to know that it's a disease that my husband has. It's not my husband. And so I'm paying attention to what's going on with Kent. I'm paying attention to me. We're in a good place, but something's not quite right with him. And I can tell something's not quite right with him. And we've had financial issues through our entire marriage. The first time he came to me and said, I need to learn to be financially responsible, I went, No, I can be responsible for both of us. No, you don't get any access to the money. Because I was terrified, financial insecurity. And so we'd done a lot of things working through all of that. And what's happening is we got to a place where I could not check his credit card or their bank account 3 to 4 or 5 times a day. I could not do it. So I said to him, you need to change the password on the account. And he said, I don't care if you look at it. I said, no, but I care if I look at it. It's making me crazy. And we had to come up with a plan. And what we did was we gave him an allowance, and he had a bank account that it was automatically, the allowance was automatically deposited into his account. I did not have access to the account because it was making me crazy. And what I'd do when I find a charge was I'd call him at work. Wouldn't matter what he was doing at work. I'd call him at work. He'd answer the phone. I said, what'd you spend $5.79 at the Books a Million for? And his immediate response based on how he was raised was, I'm sorry. Right. And so we're not having a conversation. I'm basically attacking because I'm attacking out of fear. He's responding out of fear. There's no communication going on. So I'm working with a sponsor. I'm realizing something's going on, but here's the difference is I'm now talking to my sponsor. I'm not talking to him about it. And so she said to me, you can interrupt the process if you would like in order to make yourself feel better, but he will never get where he's got to go. Are you willing to do that today? And for 2 years, one day at a time, I was not willing to interrupt the process. And at the end of that 2 years, he had probably close to 7 years in AA, 7 years sober. I had 7 years in Al-Anon. He came to me and he said, I need to be rigorously honest with you. I've gotten us into some financial difficulty. And being the spiritual giantess I am, I said, what do you mean us? Not my debt, it's yours. And I always give the amount because I know my people are wondering, well, how much debt is it? And I spoke at an AA conference one time and I said, he got us into $42,000 of credit card debt in 2 years. And Kent was sitting in the middle of the audience with another guy, and I could see him and I could hear him. And the guy turns around to Kent and he said, dude, that's nothing. Fist bump. And I thought, what is wrong with those people? They are insane. But it was $42,000 in credit card debt. And this is where I knew I had grown and changed. And I said to him, honey, it's only money. We'll figure something out. But what are you willing to do differently? Because I'm not willing to continue to live like this. And he had to do a lot of things differently in his AA program. And I'll tell you what will happen if you're willing to go along for the ride. If you follow along on that, your program will change as well. And mine did. And we did a lot of stuff. He needed to get a different sponsor for him. There wasn't anything wrong with his first, with the sponsor he had, but he needed a different sponsor. He needed different meetings. He needed to do things differently. And he got a sponsor who got very into the spiritual disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. And it's funny, I talk to people around here and they call me and they say, you know, I'm struggling. I'm like, okay, tell me about your spiritual disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. And they go, huh? What are you talking about? What are you doing in step 10 every day? What are you doing on step 11? What are you doing in step 12? And we started doing a lot of work on step 10, 11, 12. We had a guest room. We don't like guests. We don't want anybody in our house. And so we, on a road trip one day, decided we were going to turn the guest room into a serenity room. And we took out all the guest furniture. We put in all the stuff that's important to us. We have bookshelves upon bookshelves of literature, all kinds of literature, not just AA and Al-Anon literature. We have pictures in there that mean things to us. My sponsor took a picture of the sunrise on my 50th birthday at the beach in Florida and framed it and sent it to me. The sunrise is there. She said, this is the rest of your life. Enjoy it. We have pictures of mountains in there. We have all sorts of stuff in there. And that's where we go to do spiritual work. I started doing the same things with the women that I sponsor. You know, what are you reading? What are you doing? Move in this direction. And that was great. And one more time, we took off. We started doing stuff. It was great. I was going to conferences. I was speaking. I met Jack at, I think, an Al-Anon conference long before the 10 years in Music City. I'd met you in Birmingham before that with Bo. And I'm starting to do some of that stuff. Kent's doing some of that stuff. And I've had this dream my entire life of wanting to do, the pinnacle of my career, the pinnacle of my profession is to be a judge. And that's what I'd wanted to do for as long as I could remember. And I was working for this guy. I got along really, 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 really well with this judge. And the position came open and I applied for it. And I didn't get it. And I was crushed that I didn't get it. But what happened as a result of me not getting that position, the way that whole worked out was the position came open. I had to apply for it and I wasn't going to apply for it because one more time, I didn't think I was enough. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I could do it. And my sponsor and my husband said, well, you'll never know if you don't try. Just apply and let's see what happens. And my sponsor said, your job is to walk in the direction of your dreams. Where you end up is up to God. Proceed where the way opens. Follow the path. And so I applied for the job and I didn't get it. Everybody was saying to me, what do I need to pray for you? What do you want me to pray? And I said, pray for God's will to be done in it. Pray for God's will to be done in it. And I will tell you what happened is I didn't get that job. And 2 weeks later, my boss, the judge that I was working for, we found out that his wife was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer. And I knew in that moment I was exactly where I was supposed to be in order that he could be where he needed to be. He could safely, securely, confidently go and be with his family in that time of need. We talk in the 12th step about practicing these principles in all our affairs. We're not just talking about in Al-Anon. We're talking about out in the world. And if I'm going to be of service, that disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, we're going to be a maximum service to the God of my understanding and to my fellows. That's where I need to be, a maximum service to my boss. And it was because I was in the position I was in that he could go and do what he needed to do for his boss, for his wife and his family. And his wife passed away 6 months after we got that diagnosis. But the other thing that that experience did for me was it made me realize that there was still work for me to do on me, that I still didn't feel like I was good enough. So when he came back from that and I said to him, will you mentor me? And he said, yes. And for the next 3 to 4 years, he allowed me to basically shadow him, everything that he did, every place that he went, every conference that he went to, every proceeding that he held, anybody he talked to on the phone, he allowed me to be there with him so that he could mentor me and he could teach me. And I will be forever grateful to that man for all that he gave to me, because by the time the position came open again, he said, we were actually at a conference in Dallas together, and I was having dinner with him that night, and the next night I was going to go see Ellen Cassidy. And he said to me at dinner, he said, the position's come open again. You need to apply for it. And I said, I will. And I applied for that position in May, and I was landing in Omaha, Nebraska for the Cornhusker Roundup in August when I got a text message from him and said, you need to call me when you land. And I called, and he said, you didn't get it. And I, the momentary thought is, why the hell am I doing all this work if I'm not going to get the benefit? And I knew that was just the first thought, and I didn't react to it. And he said to me, I know you need to do what you need to do for your family, but this job will not be as much fun without you. I really hope you'll stay with me and not move on with somebody else. And I said, well, let me talk to Ken about it and think about it. And we were out running. And by this point, I said I'd been transformed. I'd taken up running. I needed to lose some weight. The orthopedic surgeon told me I was fat. Those were his words, not mine. And I'd taken up running. We were running at the Cornhusker Roundup. And I said, I think I'll apply again in a couple of years. And Kent said to me, I really wish you would think about not doing that. And I said, really? Why is that? He said, because I know if you got the job in a few years, you'd be compelled to stay for the duration. And I don't want to be in Montgomery at 70 years old. I want to be someplace else. We've worked so hard to get here. I want to move on. Can you think about that? And so I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I talked to my sponsor about it, and we made the decision that I was not going to apply again. And then he said, I know you think you know where we are financially, but we have a saying in the military, trust but verify. Can we hire a financial planner and see if you're right with our financial plan? And I said, yeah. So we went and hired a financial planner, and we sat down, and the guy, first thing that happened is we were sitting there before the financial planner came in, and Kent said, if this does not work out the way you think it's going to work out, I think you need to get a second job. And I said, well, seeing as I make more money than you do, if this does not work out the way we think it's going to, you need to be the one to get the second job. And he said, that did not plan out the way that I thought it was going to plan out. But it actually worked out way better than we thought it was going to be. The financial planner said, if you want to retire at the age of 60, you can. And I turned around to Kent and I said, and you are welcome. So, That was not anything that was in the plan for us to retire at 60. But again, one more time, following the direction that we were getting, following the guidance that I was talking this stuff out with my sponsor, learning not to react to the first thing that he says or does. We have been through wanting to buy a Class A motorhome, to buying a custom-built flatbed truck to put a truck camper on it, to getting a tent. We've actually got a tent. And what I've learned to do is not to be with him, but not get on the train every time he goes off on one of his rides. And we've gotten to this place in our recovery, in our relationship, where we can have conversations about retirement. We can have conversations about finances. We can have conversations about money. We can have conversations. But I'll tell you, it took us up until we were 17 and a half years in when one weekend, I happened to look over at my husband while we were sitting in the bed, and he was one more time watching something, some YouTube video about a watch. And my husband's a gadget geek. And I said, what are you watching? And this is the way I heard it. He said, nothing. He says, that is not what he said. He said, nothing. Now that is not what you said. And I didn't say anything about it. On a Monday morning, when I walked out of the bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning, he said, I bought the watch. And I didn't say anything. I turned back around, walked back in the bathroom, came out and said, how much did you pay for it? And he said, I got it on sale. I said, that is not what I asked you. How much did you pay for it? And he said, I don't have time to talk about this now. I have to go to work. And I thought, one more time, I'm going to have to kill him. And actually, I did not want to kill him. I wanted to hit him in the head with a brick. I thought that would be more effective. And so I called my sponsor at 7 a.m. And the first thing out of my mouth was, can I hit him in the head with a brick? And she said, it will not get you the reaction that you were looking for. And she said, you guys have tried everything. You've done the steps. You've done the work. You've done the traditions. You've done all of this stuff. Perhaps it's time to get some outside help. And so we ended up having to go to a family counselor to talk about the money. It was one of the best things we'd ever done. I had some contempt prior to investigation about counselors because I thought Al-Anon could fix everything. If you look at our literature says, if you need outside help, go get it. And we got some outside help. And it gave us a language for us to be able to talk about what we thought was money. Turns out it's given us a language to talk about everything. We've talked about the finances. We've talked about retirement. We've talked about taking my mother with us in retirement. My mother lives directly across the street, and my husband is willing for my mother to come with us when we move. We're moving to Colorado in under 2 years, hopefully, God willing, if the creek don't rise. That's my plan, but God's in charge. We invited my mother to join us. We allowed my mother to say, I'd love to come. Well, she didn't say I'd love to come. She said, I'm willing to come, but I want my own place. That's fine. We'll do all that stuff. We have car conversations and we have hiking conversations. And we call them that because one, neither one of us is willing these days to jump out of a moving car. And two, neither one of us is willing to leave the other one out in the woods. And we have these conversations and we don't blindside anybody with the conversations. Say things like, hey, I want to have a car conversation with you this weekend about X. Or I want to have a hiking conversation with you about what the conversations have been recently is about. I want to have a conversation about, can we go someplace? Can we travel? And my husband is actually being the responsible one saying, no, no, we can't. We have to stay home. Okay, fine. I know people have been just, the pandemic has been difficult, but it has not been horrible for us. And I'll tell you why. It's because I got a program recovery that tells me to look for the gratitude. It tells me to look for, where are you growing today? What are you supposed to learn today? What are you supposed to get? What old idea are you operating from today? And I've done that through the whole pandemic. And I will tell you early on when we were, when everybody was working from home, Kent and I were both working from home, I was a little concerned about retirement and how are we going to be at home together by ourselves, the two of us in retirement. This pandemic has absolutely eliminated any doubt I had that we are going to have a ball. We're absolutely going to have a ball. One of the car conversations we had was about getting a dog. We've always had dogs our entire marriage. We'd never trained the dogs, but we'd always had them. And we lost a dog in 2017. And we made a pronouncement because we are very good at making pronouncements. And we made this pronouncement that we were not getting a dog for a year. But I'll tell you, I'm paying attention. I am present in my life. We do prayer and meditation together. We talk. I am paying attention to my life. And I could see my husband coming home every day getting more and more sad that he didn't have a dog. And so I said to him, I want us to have a car conversation. I want us to go someplace. I want you to plan it. And I want to talk about whether or not we should get a dog. And so we planned a trip to a little alpine town in North Georgia called Helen, Georgia. We drove out there and we talked about getting a dog. And we talked about what we wanted in a dog. And we talked about what we were willing to do with the dog. We talked about what we were willing to spend. Were we willing to invest in a dog? And as a result of that, we have the most magnificent, absolutely magnificent beast named Ragnar, the magnificent Viking King, because we got him right after we got back from Iceland. And we are having a ball with that dog, absolutely having a ball with that dog. But the only reason we could have this conversation, we had one morning where I said that woke up and said to Kent, what are we doing today? And he said, we're going to the shelter to get dogs. I said, no, we're not. And he said, you said we could get dogs. I said, not today. And I spent the entire, we talked about this morning. I said, 24 hours, very uncomfortable for me to sit with him pouting and stomping on our hound and pitching a fit. But we didn't get that dog. We got what we had agreed to get. We talked about it. And Al-Anon is the one that's given me the tools for all of this to allow me to be able to talk about this. The last thing I'm going to say, I saw the sign, Jack. I got 5 minutes. The last thing I'm going to say is this. 2 years ago, my boss, the one that I had gone to work for, knew that he was retiring. His daughter was also being nominated and confirmed for a judicial seat. And on the last day that I could work for that judge, I went to work for his daughter as her career law clerk. I have known that family. I've known that woman since she was 15 years old. My first job was my first legal job was to clerk for her father. My last job is going to be to clerk for her. And what I've come to realize is there's a lot of synchronicity in there. And everything I had done over that entire time that I mentored, that I was mentored, was so that I could set a very firm foundation for her. I do not feel compelled to stay longer than my time, but I'm going to build a solid foundation for her to be comfortable when I leave in less than 2 years. I'm so incredibly grateful that you've given me the skills and the tools to be able to do that, that you've given me people. There are people on here that I know. My friend Patty is here. Jack is there. I saw Jay get on here at point. I wouldn't have any of these people in my life were it not for Al-Anon. Al-Anon has given me a life way beyond my wildest dreams. We say all the time, keep coming back. I say stay with us long enough for you to become happy, joyous, and free the same way that I have become as a direct result of working these steps, having a sponsor, developing a relationship with a God of my understanding. I wouldn't want to relive a lot of my life, but I wouldn't change a single second of it, including this evening, including the fact that it is so far past my bedtime, Jack. You can't even begin to imagine. But I want to thank you guys for this opportunity, and I love you, Jack, and give my love to Leslie. Peace.